Welcome to the 25th Advisor Press Author Marketing Teleconference call held on November 12th, 2008. During these calls, we hear from top book marketing experts and have a chance to share ideas. Today's call is What's Up with eBooks with Robert Nagel. What is environmentally friendly, endorsed by Oprah, distributed worldwide, can be read in the dark, empowers aspiring authors, could end textbook shortages, and gets 38 million hits on Google? Well, ebooks, of course. Ebooks may be reaching a tipping point. Just a few days ago, Oprah Winfrey gave an enthusiastic endorsement of Amazon's Kindle ebook reader on her nationally syndicated TV show, while major publishers are launching new titles as well as backlist titles in ebook format. Apple's extremely popular iPhone is also breeding a whole new generation of ebook users with its gorgeous screen and wireless download capabilities. Our guest commentator this month is Robert Nagel. Robert is a Houston-based technical author with a background in literature and teaching. He holds a master's degree in creative writing from Johns Hopkins University and writes pseudonymous fiction. As Telereed's web administrator and frequent contributor, Robert has fresh insights into ebooks, / new forms, / new markets. Welcome to the call, Robert.
Glad to be here.
Why don't we start with a little bit about your background and how you got involved with ebooks and Telereed?
Okay. As you said, I got a master's degree in creative writing, and I wanted to write the great American novel. And in the 90s, I worked overseas for a while, and when I came back, I discovered a lot of things had changed. A lot of my assumptions had changed. A lot of things which I had been told in graduate school would be the state of the publishing market had changed. And I carefully looked at how I'm reading, how people read differently now that we have the internet. What things are we tending to read? What things are we tending to avoid? I also noticed, and let me just back up and say that I was a Peace Corps volunteer where we didn't have electricity, much less computer access. I read a lot over there, and I found when I came back kind of reverse culture shock where I not only did I not read, but when I read, what I was reading was different than what I'd read, you know, before Peace Corps. You know, I would not read as many books. I would read magazines. I'd watch more TV. And I was just very curious about how my reading habits have changed, and I'm certainly a lot of people's reading habits have changed. Anyway, I think one way I got into ebooks is simply because I wanted to read without having to look at a computer screen. And I know that there was a lot of content being put on the computer screen. And, you know, laptops were not very cheap in early 2000. They're getting cheaper, but they're still not that cheap. But I basically had a three-part test. One, could I read it in bed? Two, could I read it in a restaurant? And three, could I read it on public transportation? And that's something that a physical book you can do very easily in all three cases, but you can't do with reading on my laptop or reading a computer. You just can't do it. And so I started hunting for kind of solutions that would satisfy those criteria, because there's a lot of time that we spend, idle time, in between job and home, while we're waiting for somebody, where we could fill up that time with reading. And if we have something that we can relate to, that we can access, we can catch up on our reading there. I find, and maybe this is just, you know, the culture shock from Peace Corps, that in Peace Corps I would have time to read lots of books and just read them continuously. And when I came back, I found that my time was more segmented. There's just a lot of interruptions in all this, and I think that our reading technology needs to keep up with our reading styles and our lifestyle of interruptions. And I think ebooks have the potential to do that.
Well, I think that's true. I enjoy having things handy, and since I'm always moving around, I don't always have my computer, and I don't always have books and magazines. Today I carted a whole carton of books to the office because I'm trying to decide which ones to recommend in a presentation I'm going to do next month. And I've been carrying these doggone books back and forth and trying to, you know, if you've got a little device like an iPhone or something, you've got your stuff with you all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and let me just say that's another factor. The ironic thing is that the people who, you know, are really into ebooks still read a lot of physical books. We still have print books. Mm-hmm. I have a whole, you know, apartment full of books, and I would say, despite the fact that I'm continuously downloading new ebooks and whatnot, 90% of what I read is still print books. And yet, my acquisition habits are changing. I'm no longer buying as many books from bookstores as I did. Maybe I'll buy digital editions. Maybe I will just download free things. And I think that is a compelling reason to go with ebooks, just for the simple fact that, you know, it's tiresome to acquire all those print objects around. And, you know, I'm about to move in a month or two, and I've moved a lot of times in the last decade. And let me just say, I've developed a lot of good weightlifting skills by lifting all those boxes to the stairs. And, you know, I look forward to the time, maybe that I won't get rid of the books, but at least that I won't have – as I get older, the number of boxes I have to transport will not increase.
No, it's tough. I've got quite a collection myself, a couple of, I don't know what, hundreds of pounds of books. Well, tell us a little bit about Telereed also. This is the blog that I check on a regular basis and where I first hooked up with you. And what's it about? What's its mission?
Telereed is the brainchild of David Rothman, an author and an advocate of digital technology, and he was very frustrated by how libraries are not switching to digitalization. Partly it was because of ossified bureaucrats. Partially it was for funding, and partially it was over disputes over intellectual property, how you could do it. And it also, I guess, was a technology issue about the differences between format. One of the kind of the sad facts about ebooks, the early adopters who get ebooks, they may buy an ebook, they may be willing to spend money for an ebook, but 10 years, they may not get around to reading it until 10 years later. I mean, how many books have you acquired at school or, you know, in your adult life that it takes you more than 10 years to read? And, you know, when you talk about computer documents, how many computer documents do you have accessible that you can open and read with the current software? And a lot of people who bought ebooks, you know, in the early 2000-2001, find that they have a format that's not really compatible with anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a fear that people have. Well, you know, they'd certainly want to buy ebooks, but they just want some guarantee that when they actually want to get around to reading it, it'll still be there. Now, I think that has two implications. Implication number one is that for distributors, I think they need to provide some sort of format upgrade insurance. And what by that I mean, they need to guarantee that that this title will remain on their website, and that you will be able to obtain another copy if, you know, let's say, something were to happen with your device, you were to lose it, or to pay a modest upgrade fee. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of books that I own are by publishing houses that have gone out of business, and that's a fact of life when you talk about the long now of publishing. And I think that our hope is that it will be easier for you to take an old format and to upconvert it. And I think right now, I think federal law prevents that from happening. They have laws that forbid you from breaking through, let's say, an encryption scheme, even if the company is out of business and even if you legitimately paid for it. And I think there's some catching up to do legislatively on that. Well, so now, what was the question? The question was about Tellery. Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, one thing about Tellery is we. we have a lot of people who are very interested in technology, and we have people like David Rothman who is very much of an advocate and goader of politicians to get with the program and to make copyright law easier to understand, and also kind of to complain when necessary about publishers that they should be more compatible and they should be more willing to work with the digital world, and also just to make the concept of a digital library easier to maintain. Right now in public libraries, they've been trying to have some sort of ebook library, and they've been overrun with the need to have guarantees that it'll be encrypted. And if it's encrypted, that means that you have to do account management, and you have to have updates on your software, and therefore it's harder to download on a device, because if, for example, the PDF, if you have an encrypted PDF, you have to have some assurance that the encrypted PDF will stay in that black box on the device itself. And
wow.
I think that people have broken through it. No technology is foolproof, but it requires the cooperation of the publishing industry, of the library, of the distributor who's working for the library, the individual, and the device manufacturer. And it's a matter. Everybody's waiting for this magic agreement to occur, and it's always been very difficult. So rather than focus on the format itself, I think we need to talk about how do you make something available irregardless of format? Because I guess we don't really care. The reader doesn't care if it's in text format or Word format or PDF format. We just want to read it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like iTunes. Apple's distributing or was distributing purely protected content, and they had to provide a way for people to get copies if their computers broke down or they lost it, and it's a lot to keep track of. So our focus, of course, here is we're talking to the authors, and we want them to understand some of the basic concerns and opportunities that go along with ebooks. And I think Telerad is a good place to go to get a general sense of what's going on in the ebook space, although you do tend to focus on some of these social and technological and almost political conundrums that go on. But something about the technology, and an article today mentions 500,000 downloads of one of the ebook reader software packages for the iPhone, for instance. So it's kind of a moving target, but people don't have, if the publisher of a book doesn't want to, they don't have to encrypt a book. It's up to the publisher, and that can be an independent author, and they can bypass a lot of these headaches.
And let me just add, that's what seems to be the music industry is moving toward, not encrypting things. I just bought, for the first time actually, some MP3s off of Amazon that wasn't encrypted, and maybe I could share it. Maybe I will. I don't know. I'm not going to, but maybe I could. But when you talk about self-published stuff, people don't have an incentive to share it, especially to share it illegally, especially if the price point is low enough.
My theory is that if something is fairly technical or not of broad interest, it's less likely to be shared out into the ether anyway. For instance, we're publishing personal finance books. Those are not going to be as popular as the new Harry Potter novel or something that, say, college kids would be interested in, who are more prone to sharing things.
And one of the things about pirated books is that it's hard to find the things you want. Maybe you can find the things you don't want. Just every year or two, I would go to the Pirate Bay, which is kind of the hub of BitTorrent pirating stuff, and they have like a section for ebooks, and I just check, what are the best downloads for ebooks? These are people, things that have been, distributed without permission, etc. And it's just crazy. Number one is always like Dungeons and Dragons manuals. Number two is 500 computer books. And I actually looked at the table of contents of that, and they were like computer database books from 5 years ago. They have some things about hacking, computer hacking. So, piracy is, a concern, but I think that people worry about it too much. I mean, I'm sure Harry Potter you could find that fairly easily. But on the other hand, I think some publishing companies are more concerned about it than others because they invest a lot of time, a lot of money in both the author and in the promotional campaign, and they want to make sure that money is well spent. For a lot of people who are, small independents, you are self-publishing, we're investing our own time, maybe a little of our own money, but we're not really hurt that significantly when we have piracy, when we have people sharing things. Also, let me just mention, probably one of the most successful ebooks out there is kind of an author who writes a book. He wrote a book called the SEO book. SEO, for people who don't really keep up with it, is search engine optimization, which is a technological subject about how do you make sure your business gets good search results. And he actually is a computer guru, and he keeps a blog. I think it's called the SEO book blog. And he has been selling this book for $79, and I interviewed him by email, and he just makes it in PDF. Didn't really give much thought as far as encryption or whatever. But he sold it for $79. I mean, this is sort of an extension of his consulting fee. If you want to pay for a consultant, he'll charge you more. But here was the bomb that he dropped when we were exchanging emails, is that he's been selling, I can't remember it, but just from his own website, he's been selling enough to make at least $1 million. People will pay $79 if you have a specialized subject. And I said to him, I was very happy that he didn't encrypt, and I ended up paying for the book. And by the way, I'll put in a plug for you. It's a good book. But one of the things, actually, I think that makes his example very, very good is that not only are you buying the book, but you're buying unlimited updates. So you always have the most up-to-date information about that subject that he knows a lot about. He also has some membership perks, which involve the ability to download tools, and maybe there's a members-only forum on his SEO blog site. But that may not be a case that we can point to as an ideal case for every kind of book. But it's a case where somebody who is making a ton of money from ebooks and is putting basically, and he's the first to admit, he puts a lot of his content on the blog for free. And the book itself is just his attempt to organize the information logically. And he tries to keep it as up-to-date as possible. And that is a very valuable resource. I mean, I don't regret for a moment paying the money I got. I mean, when I read it, I said, there's a lot of stuff in there that is repeated from the blog, but I just appreciated the fact that I had it in a book form, in a portable form, for one thing. Now, I don't mean to be an advertisement for him. I'm sorry about that.
Well, I don't know if you've mentioned his name yet. Do you want to mention his name?
I don't even know his name. I read an article about him. SEO book. SEO book is all you have to Google.
Cool.
And of course, I mean, one of those things about the subject of SEO, that if you write a book about SEO, then people are going to blog about you, and you kind of are going to already get a lot of publicity as it is. So.
Well, that's a very neat illustration, and I think it highlights the fact that ebooks do certain things better than regular books. They can be updated frequently. They're searchable. Yeah. They're portable. They're good for reference. They're good for nonfiction kinds of things. Let's go all the way back to the beginning here, and I'll ask you what is the definition of an ebook? I mean, they take a lot of different forms. Do we have a working definition?
Well, the short answer is I don't know. I mean, I guess you would say an ebook is just digital content which you can read. I think we have a debate about whether it's content you can read offline or content you can read online. For example, if you have a cell phone and you're reading a website that is, let's say, a fiction website. Is that an ebook? Well, I don't really know. You're still reading. You're still reading creative stuff, a story of some kind. And, you know, I mean, that, I do a lot with my PDA. I download lots of RSS feeds, and I read them. And, you know, I totally enjoy that. I totally enjoy being at Walmart or a supermarket or, you know, on a bus and taking out this and catching up on, like, 50 blogs. It just makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we think of ebooks, we need to go back to what the definition of a book is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you talk about books, there's a certain level of immersion that takes place. When you open up a book, you want to read only that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ebook tries to take that concept too. There are times when I'm reading an ebook on my ebook device where I kind of say, well, you know, I want to go on the internet and double check that or, you know, look this up. But inevitably, I'm upstairs on my bed reading, and the computer is downstairs, so I almost never do it. And I feel glad that I haven't done it. I don't have this distraction. I think also when you talk about ebooks, you're talking about devices. You're talking about something which can be read on a specific device instead of a computer. And I think that that's one of the causes of confusion for the definition of ebooks, because people think of ebooks as something as basically synonymous with a PDF, which you would read on a computer or a laptop or all that. And in the last few years, there have come out quite a number of single-purpose devices simply for the purpose of reading. Now, there's a lot of debate about whether the single-purpose devices will last. For example, one reason that they will last is their battery life. With the e-ink devices from Sony and from Amazon, the Amazon Kindle, you have pretty much a good several weeks, if not a month, of reading time without having to charge, without having to worry about that. On the other hand, you know, that may not be that big of a deal. You know, I mean, we carry around our cell phones, so you know, and we charge them. We don't have to worry about, you know, them going out. So I think that there is technological issues with the definition, inextricably linked with the definition of what an ebook is. You know, is it device specific or is it abstraction? I think the crucial definition is the level of immersion. And I think also an ebook probably suggests an internal organization in a way that we don't get on the web. When you're talking about the web, you're talking about, well, I'm going to read this, you know, fancy article about whatever, and oh no, there's a link. Do I press the link and go to this article by this 19th century scientist, or do I continue reading the article?
Mm-hmm.
The other issue, I guess, I was referring to something that I wrote a few years ago on a site called, oh, I don't even remember what it was called. I wrote an article, a movie review, whatever, and I went to it just to remind myself what I wrote, and I found that on the site there was this flash video. It was an advertisement for Match.com, and it was a picture of a pretty young girl who was looking into a webcam. She was looking at you, the reader, and she was kind of brushing her hair, whatever, and she was kind of taking off her sweater and then putting it was like a 30-second loop, and I remember thinking, that is so annoying. I when I wrote this article, I never imagined for a minute that this kind of advertisement would be pretty much in the middle of the article. I could not read that article, and I think one. And this probably is a little bit controversial, but I think one thing about ebooks is, you know, I don't think animation is going to be that important, or the interactive part, because I think that an ebook is an immersive experience.
Interesting point.
Let me just finish one of my thoughts about ebooks. I think that books like ebooks are, you know, they're objects of capitalism. They're the way that our society has chosen for authors to get compensated for their efforts. And I think that, I mean, I have kind of mixed feelings about that, because we have the industry, we have the commercialism, We have people who are writing books for the wrong motive. But even though it's clear that what we're reading is changing, it's not clear what people will pay money for. And so, you know, if instead of writing a book and trying to sell it, if I were to keep a blog, would I be able to sell that too? I think the expectation is that if it's on the internet, it's free. If it's in digital form, it's free or extremely, extremely affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we haven't really decided about whether intrinsic to the concept of the book is the idea that this is the way that an author profits from it. And I mean, I could think of some ways in which the sale of a book or a sale of an ebook is not the way that somebody profits. I mean, it goes back to the old, Madonna doesn't make much money off her CDs, but she makes a lot of money off her concerts. For the SEO guy, well, actually, that's not a good example because, I mean, he actually does sell the ebook, but there are a lot of people who put out promotional ebooks for free or trivial cost in order to drum up business or to establish his or her expertise in a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that in this world that we live in, publishing and trying to figure out our opportunities, I think it's important to keep to know what you want to get out of an ebook as a producer of an ebook. Do you really want to sell it as an object, or do you want to just use it as a way to get some ancillary benefits of it? And is that enough? You know, I mean, I think we're all struggling with that question, and I don't have a good answer to it, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I'd love to provide little encapsulated quick answers for people, and here's what you need to do, and everything's taken care of in these phone calls. But I think you're actually doing a greater service by allowing us to open up our minds to more possibilities rather than some narrow instant fix kind of thing. So it's a lot to grapple with, but I think you're on the right track being open-minded about it. So another question. I don't think we'll get through everything we want to talk about today. I love the subject, and I really appreciate you being with us. I'm wondering if we've reached a tipping point with ebooks. We have, you know, the iPhone. We've got Oprah really, really strongly endorsing the Kindle on her show. We've got Amazon pushing the Kindle. We've got this environmental concern that's greater and greater, and we've got the weight of books and shipping them and the killing of trees and the fact that 30 to 50% of all books that are published and shipped to bookstores get shipped back to the publisher and just basically torn up. And in the last week or so, we've had the Christian Science Monitor, a newspaper, not being a paper anymore. It's just going to be online. Are we seeing really kind of now a mass change as more people get devices like the iPhone and become interested in obtaining information in real time?
Well, my opinion is that it depends on the gadget and why people bought the gadget and how much it cost. Right now, the single-purpose devices are still hovering in the 250 to 300 range. I think the Kindle, I don't remember what it's at. Maybe
something
it's at 300 right now.
I think.
And I think that, you know, for people like me and you, there's a reason to do it. But even so, I had to think, you know, how many used books could I buy for that price? And one thing that I'm discovering, and we did a survey of this on Telereed, and we found a lot of good information about it. This $300 device apparently breaks a lot. In our surveys, we found that 10 to 15% of people who bought their e-ink device had breakages of the screen, so it was totally unusable. And sometimes they would have to pay for their own repair. And repairing the screen is a major repair. I mean, it's almost half the cost of the book.
Sure.
So I think that the question is, you know, for $300, I don't know. I mean, I think it gets the early adopters, people who have a certain need for it. I think that for most readers, it just doesn't make sense. Now, what is happening, though, is I think the price of books is the print books versus e-books is tilting in favor of e-books. And I need to explain something first, that up until, I mean, for the last few years, the thought was if you bought e-books, it's cheaper because you don't have to print the books, et cetera. Now, we all know that, you know, printing is not really a significant cost in the cost of, you know, producing the books. But what we found is that books would be maybe, say, overproduced, maybe get remaindered, whatever. They end up on Amazon.com or Half.com used, and they would be for sale for 1 cent or 75 cents. And all you pay would be the shipping cost, the shipping handling cost that Amazon or Half.com would impose. And, you know, we got to the point where the ebook, maybe you'd have the print book maybe for $19.99. The ebook would be for $9.99 or $12.99. And then the used book, and it'd be sold on the used market a year later for 1 cent, plus shipping, which would be about $3 or $4. And what I think I'm finding is that the gap between the used print market and the digital ebook market is rapidly closing. For one thing, postage costs are increasing. Now on Half.com, if you buy a used book, I just bought one a few days ago. That's why it's so fresh in my mind. It's $3.99 shipping. So even if you're spending, you know, $2-$5 on the cost of the book, that's approaching the cost of the digital version when you have it. So I mean, I think a lot of it is dependent upon that price point, whether they can discount the digital books. And I think that the Bezos and company, they know that, and they've been discounting the bestseller books. So I think right now, for a lot of kinds of books, which are, you know, the bestsellers and, you know, things we hear a lot about, the prices will be cheaper on ebook than the new price, and very soon than the discounted price, you know, when it's being sold on the used market. Now, the question is, you know, you save a dollar here, $2 here. When is it going to make up for that big expense money to buy the digital device? And I mean, I think it becomes, you know, kind of a glamour item. I think the Kindle, I think Oprah has given visibility to it in a similar way that Steve Jobs has given visibility to the iPhone family of devices. So there'll be this sense that people need to have this device. And I think also from like I said before, just not so much talking about the environmental. I think that's a good reason. That's kind of a justification after you buy it. But I think it has to do with crap management. I remember George Carlin talking about, you know, you have to move your stuff. You know, you need a house to move your stuff into. And, you know, I think people are becoming more attentive to the idea of, you know, like accumulation of physical property versus digital property.
Wow, good points. I'd like to throw in a little thought that I came across this week. The iPhone is now the most popular or biggest selling handset of all of the cell phone devices out there, and it's beginning to sell into the lower income strata.
Yeah.
Now it was a premium item when it came out, $500 or $600. It's a smartphone, so it has more capabilities and more complexity. So why would it be selling, you know, to these lower income people? And the theory that I've heard, which makes sense, is that it's cheaper overall because you don't have to buy five or six different devices. It's a GPS.
Yeah,
it's a phone. It's an ebook reader. It's a web access device. And so the fact that it's all in one, so it's easier to deal with. It's well handled, well packaged, so it automatically does a backup when you sync with your computer, so your content is protected and so on. It really is a very attractive way to gather electronic digital content, and it's right there, and they've already got a store for it, and you can download wirelessly. So a lot of convenience, and the only drawback is that smaller screen. But my theory, and a lot of people would argue with this, but I think once you start to read something, whether it's printed on a stone tablet or on a digital screen or on a printed page, you forget where you are. You're transported to the world of that content. And I think that even though it's a small screen, I think it has substantial possibilities as a reader.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I generally agree with you about the possibilities for reading. The only thing I want to point out is that I went to a conference about a year ago where they were talking about what kind of content will be delivered through cell phones. And somebody made the very interesting point that web designers have figured out how to design for the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't figured out how to design content well for the cell phone. What kinds of content do you want? I'm not on the wireless cell phone market right now. I probably will buy a phone in about 6 months or so or whatnot. I'm waiting for the bigger and better to get. You know, one of the good things about technology is that you wait 6 months and you'll always have something better and cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I think also that one appeal of the iPhone is just simplifying your life, that you don't have to worry about having your data here and your email here, email access here, your laptop here. You can sort of combine a lot of things, and there's a lot of advantages in that. On the other hand, what happens if one significant feature breaks? What do you do? That's sort of, the single purpose device versus the multi-purpose device all over again. I'm fascinated by what's happening in Asia, though. Apparently, ebooks are, and when I say ebooks, I mean in all the form, but I'm talking more, I guess, more in the creative side. There's a lot of writers who are making their living by these one segment a day stories that are delivered via ebook, via cell phone. And I think a lot of it is people don't buy a cell phone for the purpose of reading. They buy it for the games and obviously talking on the telephone and, other things. But it's one of these things where we see that feature exists, they'll play around with it, they'll download a few things, and, at some point there'll be a practical reason why they need it. One thing that I can point out is tourism information. It would be nice to have tourism reference guides. And then I guess you get into the question of, do you want to have something that is an object, or do you want to have just something, access to a website with information? And I mean, I think that's kind of what we talk about when we talk about ebooks. We talk about it as an object, and maybe it's really not an object. It's just access to a website. And as far as the iPhone, I mean, I guess it is the ability to use an application to access data on a server.
Yeah, wherever it resides doesn't matter as long as it shows up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think when you do get your smartphone, you're going to really find it so convenient to have everything right there with you all the time. It's an amazing experience. And I'll throw in a little anecdote. I'm not sure if it fits, but it's interesting, even if it's not perfectly germane to our conversation. I read about an application for the iPhone last night that is location aware. The iPhone, the new iPhone, has GPS in it, so it knows if you let it, you give it permission, it'll register where you are to within feet because it has the GPS satellite navigation in it. And because of that location awareness, it can do remarkable things like tell you how far you've ridden on your bicycle, your average speed, where you parked your car, where the local Starbucks are and things like that. But somebody came up with a fascinating application, and it wouldn't be of interest to me except for the potential. It's a graffiti program so that if you happen to be in a certain neighborhood and somebody else was there, they've written virtual graffiti into the phone that shows up when you get into that neighborhood. So it's not physically in the environment. But somebody's made a comment about something as if they scribbled it on a wall, and you can, of course, you can see photos of the areas, too. That's already on Google Earth and things like that. You can look at the Grand Canyon and see photos that people have taken, and they're geotagged and all of that. But kind of fascinating that we're blurring the content world with the physical world.
Yeah, and phones, have a lot of capability for that. I mean, phones in games that are on the phones, there's a lot of I forget the name of it, real world games. a lot of applications. I know that there are people who use their phone to keep track of how fast they're running or how many steps they're taking. I saw a presentation by a woman who I think she designed it for the iPhone, which was a fertility device. Mm-hmm. It was like you could wire something to your body, and it would actually you didn't want it, there was no wire. That's right. You would have like something that was applied to your body, and it would transmit wirelessly via Bluetooth to your cell phone the latest data about when the fertility cycle is at its peak, and this and the husband or the boyfriend or whoever will be notified via text message, about.
I was hoping you weren't going to go there, but you did. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's a
and
great.
And of course, there are a lot of nefarious applications you can imagine from that.
I'm going to skip going there because the poor people who are listening to this really need some information that'll help them. Oh goodness. So we were going to talk about the formats and what formats should authors be focused on. How can they get conversions done? What are the top ebook formats and
yeah.
so on?
Well, okay. First of all, I should say I'm still confused about it too. So I'm not really sure I have good answers for you. I think we have to step back a moment and say, do you want to do a traditional linear book, with the table of contents and all that, or do you want to do something a little bit stranger? Do you want to use photographs? Do you want to use images? How much control do you want to do over design? I think there are a lot of people who are self-publishing their ebooks just by starting out with Microsoft Word,
mm-hmm.
laying that out, and uploading it to the Amazon web application, whose name escapes me right now. You can also, simply by having a well-formatted Microsoft Word document, you can have a very presentable ebook. You may have to pay for somebody to do the cover, or you may have to, look into that if you have any graphical talent about that. Moby Pocket and some other smaller ebook stores let you self-publish, so let you do all your stuff on your own. I'm not really familiar with many services that I can recommend, except to say that Amazon has some services that they provide the whole gamut of depending upon your expertise. If you want to have more hands-on experience, I'm sure Lulu and a lot of the indies want to. Right now, I was going to say that the Moby Pocket format is the big format, simply because Amazon can read it. But now Amazon has this kind of amazing claim that they can promise to convert anything, pretty much from one format to a format that can be read on the Kindle. And, if that's true, then, maybe the author doesn't really need to worry about that, especially if they're more interested in providing information, if their book is more informational rather than artistic. So that's kind of one thought. In Moby Pocket, Moby Pocket is what Amazon uses. Actually, they bought Moby Pocket and then they changed it, made the format a little bit different, but it's basically the same. There's an extremely good tool called Moby Pocket Creator, which lets you do the conversions from Word or from an HTML file to a Moby Pocket format. And that seems to be very easy to do. On the other hand, I just talked to a writer who wrote a book about self-publishing, and she just said, just make sure you have it in Microsoft Word. It looks very presentable, and you can, you can convert it to PDF. You can even do it in Microsoft Word, and 2007 now lets you do it, or you can use an online converter. And she just uploaded it to the Amazon site, previewed it, online, and it looked fine. Now, that's for a simple case. And in fact, what we're finding is that they're just, simple. People want more interesting kinds of books nowadays. They're used to the web experience where you have, interesting navigation, you have lots of graphics. And I think that the print world is not really designed for that. I mean, they're more focused on how do we create the package on the outside? How do we make the type very beautiful? and how do we make it a pleasant experience to hold it, but not as really graphic. Now maybe maybe the exception would be the comic book world, where they are very attuned to that. But I mean, I think that what's happening is right now it's fairly easy to produce the straight book and send it to ebook, but I think that people's expectations of what a book is supposed to do has increased as a result of the internet, and so they want something more complex. Now, I don't know whether that implies that they want something, you know, they want a cartoon character to jump out at you when you turn on your ebook device, but I hope not. But you know, I think that, you know, people have to say, well, what, you know, I can already read a lot of stuff in my web browser, you know, I can't do this. I want to be able to return to home. I want to be able to do a search on the page. And the current ebook gadgets don't really have a lot of navigation aids. Now, let me just mention, for the sake of comprehensiveness, the other e-ink device on the market is called the Sony Reader, I guess. And there are some tools for that as well. What I'm finding that's very interesting is that a lot of websites are letting you upload your content just by cut and paste. You know, you upload it as a text file, maybe as very basic HTML, and they will handle all the conversions for you. And I mean, Amazon is one, but I've seen several other companies that do that as well. Now, the only problem with that is that they are not, you don't really have much flexibility about graphics. I mean, the big buzzword that you'll be hearing will be EPUB. And actually, people in the ebook world already know about it. It's a generic standard that we hope extremely soon will be readable by everybody. And it's basically a zip file of XML, which is like HTML, for people to download on their device. And the hope is that it'll be as universally readable on any device as HTML is, or as a text file is. And so the only kind of advice I would say would be, you need to be thinking of how do you get your thing to an EPUB format. Because if it's an EPUB format, then basically any publishing company will know how to handle it, and they'll know how to convert it. Because once you get an EPUB, it'll be able to be converted to whatever iPhone format or Mobi Pocket format there is.
Yeah, so, the EPUB is a standard that is agreed upon in the industry by a number of companies, including Adobe, and Adobe has their Digital Editions Reader. And the nice thing about EPUB is that it is standards-based. It is, because it's in XML, you can convert it to different formats really easily because there's some logic built into the document, and yet it's easy to read it.
One thing I wanted to mention is that Adobe was pretty quick in adding EPUB support to their InDesign software. That's kind of publishing software for design and layout. And so literally you can design your book in this software and click a button that says convert to EPUB, and it will. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some Adobe, you know, funny code that apparently they're doing that kind of makes not as beautiful in other kinds of software readers, but essentially it works, and essentially it's a way to land to EPUB. Now, whether that's an option, whether that's something that you want to, you know, invest some money in to do, I mean, right now I think it's pretty standard software in the publishing world. But on the other hand, there's a lot for staying with Mobi Pocket, but Microsoft Word. I mean, there will always be a way to convert something from Microsoft Word to any format. So, you know, maybe that's a way to go.
Yeah, some of our authors have done that. I wanted to point out one of the basic differentiators in the different formats is with something like PDF or Adobe Acrobat, that's a page description format. That's why it's called PDF. And it encapsulates the whole look and feel of the page. So it doesn't adapt to different readers and different size screens. It just shrinks it all down, and that's not very helpful if you have a small screen. Whereas EPUB, one of the things that it does is that you have the ability to reflow the columns. If the column can get narrower, or it can split two columns into one if your device is narrower. So the pages adapt to the reader, which is really, really a big plus in my eyes.
And let me mention one other thing that's crucial, and I think it's not really acknowledged by the e-ink readers, believe it or not, is the ability to know what page you're on, or at least the ability to know where in the book you are. And there are two contexts in which that is extremely important. One context is if you're in a book club, and that's where a lot of activity and sharing books and recommending books and discussing books is. The other one is in a classroom. You need to be able to have everybody be on the same page. And
literally,
it's not that easy. Yeah, it's not that easy to do. I don't think much thought has gone into it. And you know, let's say everybody has a Huckleberry Finn, but somebody has it on one e-ink device, and somebody has it on their internet tablet, somebody has it on their laptop, and somebody has it on their iPhone. What happens when the teacher says, go to page 50? You know, there's madness here.
Yeah.
That may be a way to keep in touch with it.
That's a good suggestion. I hope somebody out there will listen. And a good topic for Teleread, actually. So goodness, it's a little bit overwhelming, but I think it's good to know that these issues are out there. Maybe Amazon sees an opportunity to create a standard that other people can rally behind, because there is such so many possibilities, and you know who's going to take the lead in this area.
And the other thing go ahead. Sorry,
I was just going to say they seem to stay on top of what works and what people like and so on. So they really are quick to respond.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that blogging software, it's not there yet, but there's going to come a point where somebody's going to figure out how to convert a blog into something that can be easily readable as an ebook with the organization structure intact. Right now, there are many different methods for converting an RSS feed into an ebook, but there's not really good ways to make it as an EPUB or as something with a table of contents. It just isn't easy to do. But I predict in the next year or so that's going to happen. And if that's so, then probably the answer will be, you know, if you haven't done it already, is just have a blog that has, you know, general XML support, and after then the ability to convert it to an ebook will be easy. And so, you know, that's something to keep in mind, I think. You know, and I mean, I think it also needs to be pointed out that the author's role has changed a lot over the past decade or two. We were used to the Joyce Carrots and John Updike's, just sort of, you know, well, maybe those two are bad examples, but you know, the author, you know, being unheard of for about 2 or 3 years, except for maybe a book review. And then suddenly you'd find a book being tossed over the fence, and you'd be able to buy it. And then suddenly you'd hear, you know, book tour, all that. Now we face a situation where authors have to maintain a presence online, and they have to have new ability to, you know, do commentaries. What do they think about the Obama election? What do they think about, you know, what's happening in their life? How much time until their book comes out? And I'm not saying that it's good, but I'm saying it's a reality that authors need to be on the web, and there needs to be some way for people to be find out what's going on with authors. The one thing I wanted to mention is also that all the concept of the audience has changed. I mean, we have people from other countries who can read your book or read your blog or might be interested in buying your book as a result of reading your blog. I think a lot of it is that you hear immediate reaction from your readers, whether they be from down the street or in another country. And I think that authors are not used to getting such immediate feedback. I guess we are in the workshop environment, but we're not so much in the book reviews. I mean, book reviews are very formal, and I think that I think that makes authors have to be more responsive. We have a better gauge of what people are interested in and what they're not interested in, and I think that the time where an author can simply you know, be above the fray is gone. I always remember when I was in first grade, I read a book by Dr. Seuss, and it was a Dr. Seuss dictionary book, like the ABC dictionary. And it was a clever thing, you know. I mean, you had A, and they had pictures for every single word, and they were like a couple words. First graders, second graders would know the word box, word train, whatever. And I read it. It was kind of an entertaining book, one of my first books. And I remember in the letter Z, there was a made-up word. It was like Ziglaf, and he had an illustration for it, which was a Ziglaf of books. And I asked my mother, I said, what does this word mean? And she said, well, I don't know. Maybe you should ask the librarian. So I go to my elementary school, and I ask the librarian, I say, what does the word mean? And they say, we don't know either. Let's look in the dictionaries. So we looked in the dictionaries, and finally the librarian said, well, you know, you should probably write to Dr. Seuss and ask him. So I was able to find his address, and I wrote him. At Random House, and I said, what does this word mean? Now, I mean, and looking back at it, I realized that it was obviously a joke, and I have a good chuckle over it, but, you know, he didn't write me back. That bastard.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
Right now, I don't think you can get away with that. I think that authors have to be very, I mean, obviously they can't respond to every letter, but, you know, given the fact that email is just, you know, available on every computer, that comments are, you can make a comment on pretty much every site. I think authors have to spend a certain amount of time just kind of handling their audience or responding to their audience. And, you know, it's not necessarily going to help their writing directly, but it will help their writing indirectly.
Well, so, I think you got a good point there, and I appreciate everything you've shared with us. Fortunately, we've come to the end of the hour already, and there's more to talk about, and maybe we'll follow up again. But let me just ask you to share the address of TeleRead and anything else that you're up to and how people can reach you if they want to do that.
Okay. Well, it's www.telereed.org/blog. We actually have a main link on the telereed.org site. I run several weblogs, Idiot Programmer, and I do several pseudonymous fiction, and I comment on a lot of people's blogs, so you might be more likely on a comment on somebody's blog than on anywhere else. But anyway, that's enough for me, and I hope you get the chance to visit the TeleRead site.
Yeah, I'd recommend it, and hopefully we've brought up a few issues that'll be useful to authors as they think about heading into the brave new world of e-books. Robert, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.